Jess Hartshorn is a forest health specialist with the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources and a part-time faculty with the Itasca Community College in the Natural Resources Department. She completed her MS and PhD in forest entomology at the University of Arkansas, where she studied history and mortality factors of a native wood wasp. In preparation for the invasion of a non-related, non-native species, she's here today to talk with us about insects and the cold. A wood wasp.
Yeah, you did your research.
Well, I've got a nephew-in-law who studied the pine borer up in far northern Alberta, and now works as an environmentalist with an oil company of all things. So it's always interesting to me, where a person starts and where that road takes them. But what did wood wasps teach you about the rest of the insect world?
Oh, boy. So working with a wood wasp is actually really cool because there's a lot of different parts to the story. So it's not just the wood wasp in pine, but it's the host. And then there's parasites, there's nematodes. They require this fungus that invades the tree as well. They introduce this venom. There's a whole lot of different stuff going on. So, because not a lot of people know very much about it, basically everything we did was new. So
nice.
Yeah.
That's kind of the exciting part.
Yeah. It was really cool.
It's like learning all those relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. Well, we kind of brought you in today because a month ago we had some really cold weather, got down to 30 below zero or better, and some areas might even gotten to 40 below zero. And it brought up the question of, what's the effect of this kind of cold temperature on insects in general? And I think specifically a lot of our listeners wanted to know how this was going to affect some of those invasive species that we hear so much about, the emerald ash borer, the gypsy moth, spiny water fleas.
Yeah, that's always the question.
Let's kill them all.
Emerald ash borer surely will die this year.
All of them.
Yeah.
Oh,
no.
Good.
No. No.
They never all die.
Yeah, no.
Not going to happen. Even at, what is the cutoff? Is there a cutoff? I suppose Bob, when he was in, mentioned that in Antarctica they have temperatures of 100 below zero. I suspect that would probably finish off a lot. Maybe all of the emerald ash borers.
Yeah, probably the emerald ash borers, but there are still insects that live in the Arctic and the Antarctic. So there are insects that have adapted to withstand those types of temperatures.
That's astonishing.
For emerald ash borers specifically, once we get to 30 below Fahrenheit, we see about 98% mortality. But the important thing to remember is that most of the infestations... Well, the infestations that we know about, at least in northern Minnesota, are in Duluth. Mm-hmm. Duluth is just slightly warmer than what we experience here. So what we saw in Grand Rapids probably doesn't translate perfectly to the populations in Duluth. So most likely there's a little bit of mortality, but even if we have 98% mortality at 30 below, that still leaves 2% of the population to emerge next year.
Yeah, and I think it was Harvey Jader in a comment section that we had going on our Season Watch page mentioned that 30 below zero, absolute at your thermometer is not the same when you go a half inch into a tree.
Right. They're incredibly insulated under the bark of trees. And then especially if you have situations where the larvae are developing lower down in the tree and there's snow around the bowl, that's
sure.
Even more insulation.
Sure.
So there's a lot of different factors that play into it.
All right, and also if you kill off all those that are susceptible to temperatures as low as 30, you kill 98% of them at 30 below. The 2% that survive, are they going to create a population that then has that much more resistance to cold?
So in some cases, that's true, but specifically with emerald ash borer, Rob Vinette with the Forest Service and Mark Abrahamson, who's with MDA, suggest that trait for emerald ash borer specifically is not genetically linked. I asked that exact question at a climate and emerald ash borer meeting that we were at, and he thinks that it's not translatable like that, at least for EAB. So for other insects, that might be true.
So if this 2% that survived creates another population, then and we get another winter of 30 below, 98% of those will likely die. And
correct.
But 2% is enough to carry it on, and they can reproduce pretty actively.
Does it have to be a sustained 30 below? I mean, does it have to last for a little while for them to be killed off? Or
So theoretically, it's once it hits 30 below, but because they're insulated under the bark, if it takes a little bit for that area to reach 30 below, and then if temperatures recover pretty quickly, then it might not have the same effect.
Okay.
Yeah, so emerald ash borers seem to be coming, and it doesn't seem like we're going to be able to count on the weather to take care of them. What about the gypsy moth?
So gypsy moth dies a little easier. They die off at about minus 20 Fahrenheit. Some of the same issues, though. So they overwinter in the egg stage, and they're called gypsy moths for a reason. They'll lay their eggs pretty much anywhere.
Oh, good.
So if they happen to lay eggs at the base of a tree or in leaf litter, then again, they're going to be more insulated to those temperatures.
Mm-hmm. But it will be harder for them to establish a population with that kind of a temperature mortality relationship at 20 rather than 30.
Because we
can count on 20 below pretty much every winter. I can't think of a winter when we haven't at least had a few days of that kind of temperature. So yeah. Well, you know, all of that is really interesting. But what really fascinates me are those insects that are native and actually survive winter. And I'm thinking in particular of some butterflies that I always look for in the spring. It's like this is my signature thing. When I see my first morning cloak butterfly in the spring, I'm like, yeah, it's spring now. And it almost invariably is on one of those days when you leave home in the morning and you're wearing a long sleeve shirt, and about 2 in the afternoon, you're thinking, man, I could get by with a t-shirt today. It's going to be like 55, 60, and it's sunny and nice. And bang, there's a morning cloak butterfly. And I think, wow, that poor little butterfly figured out a way to survive the entire winter. And how do those insects do it? How do they manage that trick?
So a lot of insects basically create their own antifreeze. If you think about just animals in general, we're mostly water. Water, when it freezes, becomes hard and rigid, versus when it's liquid, it's obviously not hard and not rigid. So the problem with freezing when your cells are largely made of water is that they get these sharp edges and they burst through cells and they burst cells open. So insects are actually able to create basically antifreeze that kind of pads their cells. And so when some of that water freezes, it doesn't burst through the cells. So it just lowers their freezing point just like it does in your car.
So this antifreeze that they're creating, this is a product of sugars. I mean, sugars would be something they would obtain and have in their body. Glycol is the alcohol, is the antifreeze.
Right.
Glycerin, is that the what is a sugar that is in the body? Not glycerin, not glycol.
Glucose.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah. So we all have glucose.
Right.
Why don't we? You know, I mean, you look at mountain climbers, especially those people who try things like Mount Everest. Seems like a lot of them suffer frostbite, and it can be pretty severe. I mean, when you get frostbite on your fingertips, it can involve, or on your toes, it can involve the loss of that tissue because we don't do that.
Right.
We don't create that alcohol. We just suffer the loss of those cells and they don't grow back.
Right.
Unless it's just light and on the skin or something. But
yeah, luckily insects have, or arthropods in general, have another 400 plus million years of evolution on us to kind of work those systems out. So they've got a leg or six up on us.
Yeah. Well, that brings up an interesting point. How do you suppose these insects actually got to that point? I mean, how did they evolve like the mourning cloak and the commas and the tortoiseshells, these butterflies that I see in the spring? How did they evolve to overwinter as adults rather than eggs or caterpillars of all things? I mean, a caterpillar is basically a, you know, skin with water inside, and yet you've got the tussock moth, which I've seen in the middle of winter, and you've got the woolly bear caterpillar, which I've seen in winter. Again, is it alcohol? Is it that transition? I mean, how did all this all? I know there's 400 million years of experimentation and failure, and somebody did it and went, holy mackerel, look at that. I made it through the winter. Here I am.
So it has to happen in kind of a specific way. So the fluctuations in temperatures that happen very quickly do not let insects get into that state. So we have to have this gradual decline in temperature for them to really prepare themselves for overwintering. So when we talk about mortality in winter, when we have a high variation in temperature, when it's minus 15 or minus 20 one day, and then the next day it gets up into the 30s, and then the next day it's back down to minus 20, those types of fluctuations can still kill insects that maybe in other situations might be able to withstand that. So they have to have that gradual introduction of lower temperatures to be able to do that.
And I wonder, I've never actually done the research, but I wonder if, you know, years when I don't see that mourning cloak butterfly until May, if there are temperature fluctuations or weather fluctuations that cause the death of many of those butterflies, and you know, so that you only those that were secreted in exactly the perfect spot
right
survive.
Yeah, I mean, we see the same thing with trees and plants when we get a few warm days or a warm week, and then plants think it's okay to open up, and they're sorely mistaken, and then it freezes, and then we have a bunch of die-offs. So we see that thing across kingdoms for sure.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So what's something remarkable or surprising that you've discovered about insects and cold?
Oh, boy. Probably, like you said, when we see insects out when there's snow on the ground, it feels like that should not be possible. And I think probably the most surprising thing for me is that other people tend to be surprised. even people that have lived in northern Minnesota for their entire lives, it's like every year they think, oh, okay, this is the year that all the mosquitoes die. So really, I mean, when it comes to insects, nothing surprises me at this point, just because there is so much variation. I think what surprises me most is people's reactions to them.
Uh-huh. And there are some amazing sights out there. I mean, I'm thinking of like these little snow fleas.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
All of a sudden you're out skiing and it looks like somebody sprinkled pepper all over this snow, and you start looking at them and you realize, wait, those are bugs and they're alive. And where are they when I, you know, when there's no snow on the ground and, you know, that kind of thing. It's always like, how do they survive? How do they manage?
And leaf litter is a wonderful thing for insects. Leaf litter and snow can be highly insulating for insects. So another thing that people ask about a lot is deer ticks and wood ticks.
Oh, yeah.
Because of the increase in Lyme disease over recent years. And they're incredibly efficient at detecting those cold temperatures before it gets to that point and just burrowing into leaf litter, burrowing into the soil. We get a little bit of snow on top of that, and it insulates them very well.
Yeah, I hadn't even considered those, but gosh,
that's true.
No. I'm anxious to learn more about deer ticks, and I have a very healthy population of deer ticks at my house in my area. I can find half a dozen on me after a short hike. So I would be really interested in what it's going to take to kill them off.
A lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the native insects and native arthropods that we talk about, they're, like I said, evolved to deal with this. So like Eastern larch beetle is killing off tamarack in northern Minnesota. And a lot of people ask, well, is the cold weather going to kill those off? But they have to experience about minus 40 to have any sort of appreciable mortality. And even then, we're not talking about a total die-off. We're talking about an increased chance of them dying. So
what's going to set the deer ticks back? Is it going to take a year of no snow and really cold temperatures?
No snow, really cold temperatures, and birds.
Oh, yeah. Chickens.
Yep. If we could just, well, no, I don't want to advocate for giving everyone chickens. It's just, let's back up on that a little bit.
I know that when we raised chickens, and my son was very taken with poultry, we had almost no ticks.
Yep.
And in the yard, there were no ticks.
Yep.
You didn't have to worry about them. Those chickens were spying on those things and gobbling them up in a hurry. So.
And Grand Rapids will now experience a high volume of permits to get chickens.
All right. All right. Well, get a chicken, send it out to my house and have it eat the deer ticks. Jess, thanks for coming in.
Yeah,
it's been really a fun morning. Great to hear from you. And we'll have you back. There's the insect world is an incredibly diverse and fascinating place.
Yep. That's why I like to be in it.
All right.
I bet you loved insects as a little kid, huh? Do you remember like one of the first insects that...
I actually hated insects as a child. I was terrified of spiders and insects. I actually started out in English education and in high school I was in broadcast management. So I was going to college to be in literature or be on the radio is what I initially went to school for. And
did a
180 on that one.
Wow.
Come back anytime.
Yeah, I got to figure out what the trigger was there. What happened?
I should not assume. I was imagining little Jess staring at insects.
Took your copy of Wordsworth and smashed a bug on the table and went, oh, look, six legs. How interesting.